Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen, low, great ball into the middle, what a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davison Sanchez, Lucas Moura, and belted into the net, brilliant goal! On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it, oh great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible! You, Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First time here to Son. Kane, good area for Spurs, and Kane's not afraid to shoot. Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane! That is exceptional. Lamella will try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason. Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward. Oh wow, what a run! Yunmin Son from inside his own half has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
Hello there. Welcome to another New Spurs Order pod under the Touchline Fracker banner. We're live again on a humid Thursday night. X-Pac will be your host this evening, and I'm joined by three lovely co-stars. First up, Sting. How you doing, man?
Yeah. It's been a long time, or at least it feels like it's been a long time since I've been on. Yeah, good to be on again. Finally have time. So yeah, let's chat Spurs.
I'm scared to see your government name in case you get blacklisted again, but yeah.
Oh, this is... Sting is my government name, Owen. Let's call it that.
And Booker T, how you doing, man?
Yeah, what's going on? Always good to be back with you boys. Actually, it's been a minute. I've been in a pod with you, Jack, actually, so...
Yeah,
be interested to get some of your takes tonight. But yeah, I'm good. I had a bit of
You say you haven't been on a pod with in a minute?
Jack.
You mean Sting?
this Jack fella. I'd know you're talking about, mate.
I don't know who that is.
And then there's the tones there of Macho Man. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Good to be back on the pod. It's like you said, this heat is killing me, man. You know the ones where you've just been napping out of like heat stroke? You know what I'm saying? But it's too much. It's not my preferred stroke. You know what I'm saying? But we're live, man. We're live.
Well, you had to get that out of the way, didn't you? Just before okay. Anyone else did.
Quickly.
Fucking hell. Can't be sleeping on this stroke game. Anyway, pause. And then back. We are... it's a bit of a celebration. Other than this. I guess there's news which... kind of saddens me a bit, but I knew it was a bit inevitable.
Go on, Owen. Say it.
Accelerating with, do I even say his government name as well? Okay, Winksy. Looking like he's going to join Everton. Yeah, the fall from grace has been pretty spectacular from him, as well as other players who we've got rid of. And yeah, he looks like he's going to be up next. He's going to join Frank's Everton. Sting, what are your initial thoughts on that? I guess you're celebrating, right?
That's what
you are.
That's
so what I've been,
that's swimming in my head. I've been listening to this all day.
You know what? If we get striked, it actually wasn't me.
Shit, yeah, I didn't think about that. I hope it was under 10 seconds, so
that's all. I think it's 7, but yeah, I'll allow it.
But yeah, that sums up how I'm feeling right now. So good to get this guy off our books. Honestly, you know, I wish him all the best. I hope, you know, I wish it worked out for him. You know, I wish he, that round, those two Real Madrid performances, that Champions League final, amongst a couple others, you know, if he played at that level on a consistent basis, I'll be just as disappointed as you. But he hasn't been playing like that. He's been absolutely shocking outside of that. Very mediocre. Sideward pass, merchant, you know, the English Mikel Arteta. I'm just glad he's gone. That's all I'm saying.
Damn.
Jubilant.
He could end up being a better manager than that last guy you ended up mentioning there. But yeah, fair play. Yeah, for me, he was someone who I really liked as a player. Obviously, breaking through 16-17, that's really good. Had great, good seasons, 17-18 and 18-19. Then for me, he obviously didn't suit Mourinho's style of play. His confidence dropped. And I think someone in the group chat mentioned it, but they said that he probably got a bit too entitled and comfortable with his position in the squad and didn't necessarily look to do the extra curricular work to improve himself or become a star in the team to just improve his overall game. And yeah, both of those have compounded in him now being upgraded on, which I can admit he's been upgraded on with Bissouma. And like you said, Sting, I wish him all the best as well. And I think he can still thrive in a possession-based team in the league, whether it be Everton, who I can't really tell how well they're going to do next year, to be honest. But any possession-based team, yeah, I think he can do well. So that looks like by the time of the audio release, it'll be Winks and Bergwijn essentially gone as well. Once the whole fee thing can be hashed out. Yeah,
I feel one thing that will probably build his confidence and get him playing to a level, like you said, a possession-based team, but a possession-based team with constant runners. And I think he needs to have that confidence to, you know, be able to play those balls in without sort of worrying about losing it, you know, worrying about just having a low sort of pass success rate. I think he needs to have a manager that backs him and allows him to, or gives him the freedom to do that constantly without worrying about losing the ball, essentially. I think that will help. But again, I think there is a certain ceiling he has and it's not very high.
Yeah, you do have to kind of make quite a lot of concessions for a player of his type, I think. You need a player who's, well, a midfielder alongside him, who's got legs for a start, because off the ball, he can get over it.
So not Dele Alli.
Well, we'll see how that happens. I've just remembered seeing that Everton as well. Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, they've got, I don't know. Tobes thinks Doucouré is better than Sissoko, and Sissoko was his best partner in the 18-19 season. So who knows? That could work. But yeah, the concessions for him to have legs in there and to kind of be in that rhythm of knowing when attackers are going to drop, going to run, as well as other midfielders, where they're going to show for the ball, where they're going to run in behind, just in general. Yeah, and being in that rhythm is something we didn't necessarily have under Mourinho. We didn't really have that under Nuno ever. And yeah, by the time Conte came around, you know, we need someone who's going to be more, way more well-rounded and doesn't necessarily have to have these concessions. And what we'll say as well, like, we seem to be getting quite a good fee for him as well. It looks like it's going to be about 20 million. We signed Basuma for 25 without the performance-based add-ons. So
I'm hearing FFP could make it a little bit peak, so it might end up being like a loan, loan of obligation, like 20 million next season, which is obviously a bit different to the Dele Alli deal, which is a bit complicated because I swear Dele Alli technically went for free, but we get 15 mil after a certain amount of appearances or something like that. But now, those appearances, but they'll still give us P anyway. The Dele Alli deal confuses me. But yeah, I think the Winks piece might drop the year after, I think.
That's fair. So yeah, I was looking at it on paper. Like, it looks like we've upgraded our midfield for next to nothing, but it just depends on how these deals are done. Sorry, Booker, you were...
No, I had nothing to say.
How do we summarize Winks's time at Spurs? And the only reason I ask this is because when you ask different fans, as has been in the group chat, about Eriksen's time at the club, you know, Tobes is very, like, Tobes, for example, and I'm more inclined on Tobes' side when it comes to Eriksen, is like, yes, the last, you know, 6 to 12 months was pretty but you could always low-key trust him to pull out one pass that could win the game.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you, it's not fair to use that time frame against like the rest of his body of work per se. But with Winks, obviously it was a longer time frame. He wasn't starting all the time, but the opportunities he did get wasn't really popping too tough. But I'd say he started quite well. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
How would you look at Winks' career at Spurs?
I think he's done okay. You know, I think he coming into the first team back in 2016, I think, getting his chances here and there under Poch, and then having his, in my opinion, what was a real breakthrough season in 2018-19. You know, starting in the Champions League final, kind of just making himself a mainstay in our, like, you know, in our possession-based sort of football under Poch. I really didn't have an issue with it. I just felt that it's weird. Like, in many different ways, as the team changed, like Dele Alli, his skill set never really changed. And because his skill set never really changed, he could only really be played in a number of different positions. I don't think he was particularly good in the advanced areas. I thought he was quite good, like, in terms of his deep line, like, playmaking. But again, he wasn't super, super progressive, whilst also being, like, an okay passer. I don't know. I kind of feel like he's done as well as he could have done at Spurs. And I feel like now it's probably best that he moves to a team that maybe suits his skill sets. Like, as much as there was lots of, like, really, really good things, I kind of felt that there was some bad things for me. Just felt that, like, he would always want to put himself in physical duels that he was never going to win. There was one game specifically, I think a season ago or two ago, Everton away in a cup, that really sticks with me. And I just thought, I don't think I can trust this guy anymore. And also as well, that situation that then sort of arose under Jose and then Conte, whereby you had players basically accepting that there was a second team. I mean, if you're a pro footballer playing in a first team squad, I want you to be playing as bestly and as strongly as you can to try and get into that first team. And this notion of accepting that there's a second team, for you to then just dwell on your laurels and wait for your opportunity to come in the cup games. I don't know. It just kind of gave me a little bit of a insight into his psyche. And maybe, I don't know, I mentally switched off from him then.
Yeah, I feel when the team was functioning at it sort of at a high level. So I think that, to me, that ended in the end of the 17-18 season when Poch's system was at sort of full flow. And that's when, obviously, we saw the best of Winks. And I think 18-19, he was more a 6-7 out of 10 every game sort of player, which was fine for what it was. I think Dembele's injury hit us really hard, and also just him aging. And he did hold the fort for as long as he could have, and he was probably our best player in the Champions League final, funnily enough. But again, when you know he's not a player you are going to rely on, because when the going got tough, he didn't get going himself. So I think he thrives when the team is thriving, and I think that's good. It, you know, it makes you a sort of Premier League level player, but obviously, to match Conte and Jose Mourinho's ambitions, you can't really have a player like that in our squad. I don't think there's any room for that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we alluded to similarly to Dele Alli, he didn't really, you know, develop as much as he could have. And that might have been through a level of complacency. I feel like the difference with Dele was like, you know, Poch used him in a certain role, in a certain way. You're starting every week, you're on fire, you don't really need to change anything. Whereas I think Winks, I think he could have still stayed as the same kind of player, but just not improved at what he was. He just didn't improve at what he was already good at. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to sit here and say he could have been as good as Michael Carrick, because Michael Carrick was different gravy. Like, you could see even when he was at West Ham, Michael Carrick was going to be fairly special. I do think the lack, maybe the lack of recruitment in those times when Winks was, you know, was getting better. I think because we didn't get anyone in those positions, you know, there's been a lot of talk about shirt numbers this week. When he went from 28, 29 to the number 8 shirt, it's like, right, you're the guy now at 23. And there was nobody really coming in competition-wise. Say we'd bought a Bissouma-like person in that time, I think Winks would have automatically stepped his game up and potentially got a bit better. Because like you said, when the team's functioning well, Winks does play well. And I don't think anybody can sit here and lie and say, I think, well, how many caps did Winks get? I think Winks got 10 caps for England, something like that, 10, 11, along those lines. And like, for the most part, he did actually play well. I remember the Spain game where Rashford and Sterling were basically in wide receiver for Kane. Like, Winks was comfy in midfield against Spain. And it wasn't Spain B, it was Spain. Do you know what I mean? Like, Fares, it's not the strongest Spain team we've seen in the world, but it was Spain A. So it was games like that where I'd say I lost my Winks stocks a lot later than my Dele ones. I think I was a bit more confident in Winks coming back. I'd say coming back, being a bit better than he'd been than Dele, just because of those kind of games. Because there was a time where Winks was comfortably starting for England. I think he got a bit unlucky missing the World Cup. And he did well to miss the World Cup and come back and still be playing quite well. So I do have to give him that. But, you know, you need to do more than score 50-yard goals against Ludogorets with Carlos Vinicius up top to be a Tottenham player. So,
yeah, it's funny. The games you mentioned, and we all mentioned, were, you know, international and Champions League games and European games, which tells you, I think, give him a bit more time on the ball, we can actually perform to a level. So it must be a mentality thing. Has less time, panics a little bit, and either, you know, misplaces the pass or reverts the type and goes sideways and backwards. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to expand more on what you guys have said, really. I mean, you've effectively given him the flowers that I think he deserved. And obviously, you're right in where his game just didn't progress. Like, obviously, under Mourinho, it didn't suit him. And then Højbjerg came in. So when he did actually get that someone that can kind of take his place immediately, because I guess you can make less concessions for playing Højbjerg in terms of not being ever ran off the ball, then, yeah, he effectively just was surplus to requirements under a manager who didn't necessarily play with the ball. So it's good that he got his flowers again, especially when I guess a lot of fans kind of jumped on, not necessarily people on the podcast or you guys on the podcast, but there'll be a lot of fans just jumping on the bandwagon of scapegoating him even when he wasn't playing, which was obviously a bit harsh. But yeah, it kind of, I think it was an indictment of what he represented, on in the sense that Spurs hadn't kind of upgraded or moved on from players who thought they were too entitled to I guess, improve their game and still not be kept out of the team, if that makes sense. So, again, it's got to that point now. And again, hopefully he can do well, move on, and perhaps even get his England face back, because when Winks was at his progressive best, I don't feel like...
He was better than Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, I think he still is, to be honest, minus the free kicks. But yeah, I think he can offer England something in midfield, which they don't have currently. Under that manager from Crawley, who no one in Crawley actually cares about. But yeah, fair enough. He's done a job for them before. He may be able to do it again. Who knows?
So how do we review Bergwijn's?
Similar to Winks, I think my overall thing is just earned right at the start and faded out, not meeting expectations.
It's funny, yeah, because when you look at Bergwijn's career, like, you know how people say, it's not the exact same thing, obviously, but you know how people say you could make a highlight reel of Olivier Giroud and then you can tell your kids in 10, 15 years time that Bergwijn was like the tall R9, like, you know what I mean?
And like, they believe it.
Honestly, and it's crazy. Yeah, oh. Bergwijn has more memorable moments than some of our biggest players. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
It is crazy. What, City winner on his debut? What, Leicester, 2 goals in what, a minute and a half of stoppage time? And I'm sure there's another one he's got. Like, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, for me, to summarise Bergwijn, I would just say bad timing.
Okay. Tops, I'm itching to hear.
Do you know what? It's a funny one with me. It's a funny one with me because when we first signed him, I thought, I don't really know that much about him. But lots of the videos I kept watching, lots of the things I kept seeing about him was that he was this transition sort of like 9/11, who's like quite stocky, kind of small, and he seems to be able to move up the pitch quickly, receives it in like, you know, half spaces, is good on the turn. And I thought, this is good. He started off, you know, got his goal against City, had a few decent performances. But then I just feel like the level just dropped. It just dropped and it just wasn't consistent. Like, it got to a point where I was seeing more pictures of this man in drip on Instagram than I was getting goals and assists from this guy. And in the end, I think just after the pandemic football finished, I remember thinking, I don't think he's got enough credit. I feel like Mourinho's playing out of position. Get him playing in that sort of maybe that 9, that 10, maybe 11 sort of area where he can turn on the ball, run at players. And I remember like thinking, oh, he's going to get a chance. But again, he just continued to flatter to deceive, man. And I don't know, I just feel like kind of we should just sell and kind of forget about it. I think he's got something like 6 or 7 goals in 40 odd appearances for Spurs, or maybe even more than that, actually. And I just, I don't know. I feel like his time at Spurs, whilst there's been some big moments and fair play, the goal against Manchester United at the beginning of the pandemic, the goal against City on his debut, the double against Leicester this season. These are like, you know, very memorable moments. But then again, over the period of time, I just feel like there just hasn't been any sustained performances from him consistent performances from him. So I just feel like his time at Spurs will just kind of just peter out, which I feel like it has. And I don't know, I don't want to be harsh, but I feel like he'll have more joy in Eredivisie.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that is I think from a mentality perspective, I think things got to him a lot when if he wasn't to perform. I think there were confidence issues there, like, without a doubt. And I think that whilst, you know, because we know what he's capable of, we see what ability he has. But again, most footballers have ability. Most, you know, professional footballers have ability where their confidence and their consistency doesn't match. And I think Bergwijn just seems to be one of those players where he's got so much ability, but he does flat, like Top said, flat as a deceive, because I think from a, I think it is from a mentality perspective, because consistency is one of the most underrated things in sport. And I just remember being cooked in the chat, by the way, for saying sell him last season, midway through last season. I was like, nah, I'm fed up with this guy. It was off that Liverpool game as well, Anfield.
I was absolutely fed up with him
because he, you know, people say he wasn't given his opportunity. He has been given opportunities, and there have been times when he just hasn't taken it. And you've got to step. I know, you know, you say he's young and whatnot, but you've got to you know, deliver when we really need to. And if you already have delivered, you've got to keep that consistency in doing it. Hasn't done it. He's got. We know he's got ability, but again, you know, if you want to actually win things and be successful, you can't have players like that with that sort of mentality who will chip in every now and then. Because again, his goal record isn't good.
So all that said, right, because we talked about his memorable moments, so you wanted him gone halfway through last season. So given the two goals against Leicester and him being the person that Nuno subbed on when we lost 3-0 to United, would you say the decision to keep him was justified in a really roundabout way?
It's one of those situations where you say, thanks for the memories, but it's time to go. You know, I think that is what I'll say about Bergwijn. You know, again, we all have cult heroes. I wouldn't even call Bergwijn a cult hero, but, you know, the most, you know, teams we have, you know, with great success, you have cult heroes, you know, in your squad who haven't been great players for you, but they've had memorable moments. And Bergwijn has had a couple memorable moments, but even then, I still wouldn't call him a cult hero because of the of what was at stake. It was only top four. It wasn't a trophy.
That's fair. But yeah, it's for me, when I say bad timing, I think we were justified in just keeping him just to the end of that season. That's just gone. But when we signed him, like, Mourinho apparently didn't even want him. And he was signed, had a few little moments, most notably against Man City, but effectively, again, played in the team which didn't suit him. Had a decent start under Nuno, though. Obviously, when Kane was looking like he was going to go City, then he got injured, came back under Conte in the team which did suit him, had a few good games, notably against West Ham in the Cup and mentioned Leicester, but I think he'd already made up his mind that he wanted to get first team football. Ajax have been showing strong interest. I think it might have even been since last summer, definitely since January, if we're to believe tier one sources. And that's the only reason I can think of as to why he wasn't given more minutes over Lucas Moura. I think if I was seeing Lucas Moura getting more minutes ahead of me towards the end of the season, I think my mind would have been made up as well. And that, and apparently Louis van Gaal's been telling certain squad members, the Holland national team, if you're not getting more minutes for your club, you're not in the squad. Because apparently he said this to this Timber guy that's meant to sign for United. But even though Nathan Ake gets about like 200 minutes a season, he's still picked in every squad. But yeah, this is the word on the streets. And yeah, he's definitely going to smash it at Ajax, I have no doubts.
Yeah, he will. I just wish he played more on the left for us. And I think, and obviously, I wish every Lucas substitution that happened this and last season, I wish it was Bergwijn instead, just to see a bit more what he was capable of, just to build a bit more confidence. But even then, I don't think that would have been enough.
Fair play. Nice tributes to two players who are to leave us inevitably. One of which was an academy graduate, so I guess it hits a little bit harder. We had two of our academy graduates in action last night and a couple of days before for the England under-19s in Alfie Devine and Dane Scarlett. Devine lit up the first game. I can't remember who it was against. And then Dane Scarlett grabbed a brace last night. Macho Man, how would you kind of review some of those performances?
Obviously, I didn't watch both games in their entirety, but I just with Devine especially, because I think we've all got stocks in them both. I'd say Sting probably has the least because he's just like, listen, man, you're doing well, but I'm trying to win shit right now, which I understand. I think me personally, I have a few more stocks in Devine than Scarlett, but I also found out today Scarlett's middle name is Pharrell, so I'm going to add a few more stocks because that's kind of saucy. But I think with Devine, it's just like, I remember, and I pulled up the thread the other day, I remember when we first got him from Wigan, was it 500k, and apparently we basically bumped them because they were broke. And, you know, I remember at the time, obviously, did we get him? I'm trying to remember. Had Poch already gone at this point? I feel like Poch had maybe gone at this point. Was this Jose's second season?
Might be. 1 second.
Whatever, Jose's second season.
Second season. Yeah. 2020.
And there was a lot of chat about, we need to improve the first team. This kid's not going to play early. And I've been, over the years, I've been a bit like, is our academy even like that good? And sometimes you have to get these young boys from somewhere. And we basically knew fuck all about him, apart from the fact he got released from Liverpool, pardon me, when he was 11. He used to be a striker, went to Wigan, played under 18s when he was 14, played under 23s when he was like 16. And he went to some tournament with England, 16s, was the youngest there because he just turned 15. But I got player of the tournament. And I'm like, look, there's clearly something about this boy. Do you know what I'm saying? And it makes sense to take the risk now because there's so many players that we've missed out on before. And again, alluding back to the thread, like obviously everybody was after Mbappe at a point, so that doesn't really count. But like, I think Upamecano, we nearly bagged him when he was still 17. And there was a few other players in the thread. So I think from then, I think it just made a lot of sense for us to try and bag Devine at the time. And I'm glad that he seems to have consistently just been progressing at like a normal rate for, I don't want to use the word wonder kid because I feel that's been heavily skewed by the likes of Mbappe, the likes of Haaland, etc. He looks like he's doing really well wearing number 7 for the England under 19s. Whose kid is that?
Oh, it's the window, sorry.
Oh, fair. I'm buzzing that he's doing well. Obviously, I think my favourite moment of his career so far was the 2-foot challenge on Danny Drinkwater, just because he deserved it. And I heard he's a bit of a knob in real life, to be honest.
You got a different name for Drinkwater, though, now.
What's that? What's the name for him?
You called him Danny Dehydrated after that
challenge. I did, actually. I haven't dropped slander on his head top in a while, still. Yeah, Danny Dehydrated. I think he's progressing well. I think I don't really want to call it a crossroads because he's obviously going to play for us in the future. But part of me is like, do we hang on to him as fifth centre mid / keep him another year so he becomes homegrown at the club? Because I feel like, I can't remember the exact ruling, but I know of like Champions League squads or European squads, I feel like you get an extra place if you have like a HGC, so homegrown club player, rather than a HGN. Homegrown national player, because I feel like he's going to start his third year with us now, and I think the rule is if you do 3 years under 18 homegrown club, but if we loan him out and then he comes back, he'll obviously then be 18 and then he wouldn't then qualify as homegrown club in the future. I don't know how much that would affect us or not, but I feel like he looks ready for championship. For me personally, it's just about picking the right slot for him at this point.
Which club do you think is most suitable?
Did Derby get relegated?
Yeah,
they did.
That's annoying. If they stayed up, I'd have said Derby 100%. Like, I think Rooney, from the little I watched of Derby, like they looked good when they got going, and Rooney had no problem like trusting young players like every time. Like Rooney was really good with that. I would have to probably do a bit more research into where Devine would probably go. Just a progressive team that needs a combative number 8 that lacks to go forward. And then we go from there. But he's proven he can play 3-4-3. I think for England 19s, he was playing. He played a bit on the right, but he always comes over to the left and links up with what's the Aston Villa boy's name? Chukwueze, is that his name? Chukwuma.
Chukwueze, the Villarreal,
don't
he? Yeah, that's it. Sorry, yeah. So I know he started on the right, but then for his goal, he drifted over to the left to link up with him, so he can play right wing and he can play right inside forward, if you want to call it that. He can play 10, he can play 8, and yeah, the kid just works hard and scores goals. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be an article in the future about where about like prospective spots for him. So we'll just keep an eye on the boy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And yeah, hopefully he can get that loan to the championship. I agree, he's ready. I think Wigan are in the championship, so he could return to his old team maybe if they're not. Actually, I think they were a bit annoyed about how we bought him. But yeah, I'm not sure. Looking at the table, it's saying that they're in the fixture list. So I'm just going off that we're going to win there. There's other good teams as well, maybe even Middlesbrough, because they've got midfielders with good underlapping centre midfield runs under Chris Wilder. I know, we'll see. I think it's a kind of a good indictment on how we're developing players at the moment. I think we've not been given our flowers in that sense, and how we've been developing players, how good our academy's been over the last like kind of 5-10 years. We've had a fair amount of decent graduates and we've developed some like fine players as well. I see Harry Winks is just departing us, Champions League finalist. Fair enough, like not many other academies even bring that through. Still, as a lot of Spurs fans might even begrudgingly admit, we're probably a bit jealous of Cobham Academy, not so much others, but me personally, I'm a bit jealous of them, and frankly, I think given the area of North London, how popular it is there for Spurs players to just be plucked from that area to come through, it could be quite easy for us to get to that level at Cobham just with a bit of time. Like, we've got some top players playing now. Oliver Skip's coming now to take the reins of Harry Winks. Marcus Edwards is playing at Sporting. You've got Ryan Fredericks, who's still at West Ham. Andros Townsend, still in the Premier League. Harry Kane, who's doing all right. And Carl Walker-Peters, who's getting his flowers now at Southampton. But yeah, we can see. I mean, how does that really compare against like other academies other than Cobham, like amongst like the top six in the Premier League?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I mean, I think it does okay. Like, one thing I always try and like remind myself is that a lot of other teams, the Cobhams, the Hale End, Carrington, you know, these places, they do have a lot more money to pump into their systems. They tend to also bring players from a very, very young age as well. And they maybe have a wider net in terms of players that they can bring. Whereas, like you said, a lot of these players are really from, you know, the areas in and amongst North London, or even like Hertfordshire, Winks being from like Hemel, Tanganga's from around the corner, Skip's not far from us as well. So I just feel like whilst we don't have the money. I do also feel like maybe the facilities also helps, the types of coaches that we've had. Obviously, Ryan Mason's very important in the academy. Chris Powell has always been very big for the academy at Spurs as well. And the one thing about like academy football as well is that like Potts used to always say that like it's important that you kind of, whilst you're taking on these players and you're teaching them and developing them, you need to also be able, you need to be able to provide them with a means of knowing that there is some sort of path to first team football. You know, it's kind of rare these days that you get what we call wonder kids going into first teams, like say a Phil Foden or a Sancho or a Saka per se. But sometimes you can go through different routes. You can go on loans, look at someone like Mason Mount or what's that fella? Harry Wilson. He went on loan for years. Skip had a very successful loan at Norwich. So I almost feel that, like, especially the under 18, under 23, I wouldn't want to feel like there should be that much pressure on them to be playing first team football, because I feel like they've still got time to develop. Like, you know, whilst I really like how Devine is developing, it kind of worries me that when I see Scarlett, because Scarlett clearly has the ability, but then he's not physically there yet. Like, he's nowhere near being physically ready. And it's difficult because you want to throw him some minutes so that he can develop himself, but then you also want to protect him so he doesn't get overrun, and it's not a useless experience. Someone like Niall John, who I went to watch last season for the under-23s, he was way and beyond all the other under-23 guys. And then he went on to loan to Charlton and didn't play a single minute. So I kind of just feel that we have to be careful with how we look after these loan guys. But I also believe that we're very fortunate that we do have lots of good young players. Like, we've had, like, I was fortunate this season to be able to go to a fair few 23 games, and there's lots of guys who could easily make the step up. But obviously, given the opportunity, it's not always easy. Football's a results business.
I think a player like, for example, Jaffet Tanganga is someone I think that could be a Premier League player right now for us. I think I don't think he's not set the world alight. He had a good start, but I think he still would make a very competent Premier League level right centre back in the long run, I think. And we have, over the years, I'd say it depends how you're sort of judging us. If you're judging us on successful players, or if you're judging us on making sales and profitability and producing Premier League level players, you know, it's how do you measure it, isn't it? And I think we have, over the years, you know, the past 10, 15 years, we have produced a number of solid Premier League players. We've got a list. I don't know who's got the list. I don't have it on the top of my head. But, you know, we've got a number of players that, you know, still active, still, you know, top 10, I'd say, in the league itself. But so, yeah, if you're judging it based on that, then I'd say, yeah, we do have quite a decent academy. But if it doesn't benefit Spurs on the pitch, then you can argue that it's not really a matter, essentially. So it depends how you look at it. If you're judging, you know, how you judge your academy, I'd say it is about perspective.
Yeah, it's where I say it's interesting how obviously we're trying to, we are trying to kind of get to that level of maybe a Cobham. We're trying to kick on. Obviously, we've hired that Simon Davis as like a, I can't remember what his job title is.
I think exactly. He's like academy methodologist, and then it's
methodologist. Gretas, that's it.
Methodologist, yeah. And then it's Gretas Steinsson that is now, I think he's head of, I think, oh, so he's got Steve Hitchens' old job, but I feel like their remits are different. So I think he is basically like lower league UK recruitment. Like, I think he's still called performance director or something, but he's more like UK and lower league recruitment, so Paratici can do his thing in Europe.
Yeah, it's I guess like where Greta Steinsson and Simon Davis could obviously help him. Where Greta Steinsen's remit might be a little bit different is, I guess, he'd look to help Simon Davis in just helping, I guess, the first team and the youth teams play in a very similar, if not pretty much the same way, to get that continuity. So if they're to make that step up, they kind of play in more or less the same structure, which I guess a lot of the top teams have been good at recently. I guess hopefully that pays off. And the list you were referring to, I think Ahoy made a few good honourable mentions.
Interestingly enough, I didn't realise that we actually had Rhys Oxford first, and then we released him at like 13 or 14, then West Ham took him. I think he's in Germany now. Obviously, you've mentioned Carl Walker-Peters. I think Dylan Mukande, when he gets back from his injury, I think he could be a special player. Not sure. I'm not going to try and say he's going to end up being a top six winger, but he looked very good, and I'm disappointed we let him go. But you know, everyone's got a different path. You never know. Teacher's boy, Cameron Carter-Vickers. I mean, however you want to spin it, he's an international. Do you know what I mean?
True.
Sting, what do you think?
there's a reason why I call him Cameron Cancer-Vickers, because it's like we've just been, every loan has just been a round of chemo. And we finally got rid of him. Like, thank you, Celtic, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I was this guy has like been no CV with a CV name. It kills me.
He's just been lingering about.
How many loans has he had? So he went on loan to Sheffield, Ipswich Town, Swansea City, Stoke City, Luton Town, Bournemouth, and Celtic, and now he's gone.
Wow!
And by the sounds of it, it sounds like he's done well at pretty much all of the loans as well.
He's done okay, yeah.
Bless him.
And apparently, he was excellent this season for Celtic.
Fucking hell!
I think most of the loans were pretty bad, but I think Celtic he excelled in and stepped it up. So fair play, I guess.
And then Stephen Caulker, honourable mention. I mean, he was a low at a time. I'd say he was all right at Swansea, wasn't he? He was at Swansea for a bit. Well, did he play Prem with QPR?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did. Him and Antoine Ferdinand. Yeah.
I was surprised when he left us. I thought he'd stay on another season or two, but.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was okay. He went to Turkey for a bit, you know, got his P's. I think he's on loan at some next joint now. He went to the Olympics.
He did, didn't he?
Team GB.
Yeah.
We have an Olympian now.
So actually, I think he actually plays for another country now, actually.
Sierra Leone.
That's it. Yes, AFCON. Yes, that's true. Yes.
Plays for Sierra Leone. That is so mad. So mad. And, you know, he counts as an academy product, but, you know, rightfully tweeted by Kevin Yash the other day, we are absolving ourselves from anything to do with Mr. Jamie O'Hara. You know, thanks for the memories, but just please, you need to stop talking because you've embarrassed our academy graduates. Please stop.
Low key, he had a decent left foot, you know.
He did. He did.
What? like Bentley had a decent right foot, right?
He did. They both did. That's, you know,
reborn David Beckham. You know, fucking hell. Who? And David Beckham was also a Tottenham schoolboy, but I'm sure United were just like, yeah, come true, man. But David Beckham was a Tottenham schoolboy as well. And
yeah, Peter Crouch. He's from around the corner in Walthamstow. So
yeah, man. They were about. Hold tight, Tom Carroll as well, man. He was just around. Just Championship player. I feel like Tom Carroll was Harry Winks before Harry Winks was Harry Winks. But Tom Carroll wasn't as good as Harry Winks.
When he got that assist for Bale against West Ham, I think that's when he peaked.
That's when he peaked. Yeah.
Bless him.
Absolute peak.
Which assist was better, that or Vertonghen's to Sons against Burnley? You know?
Definitely Vertonghen's.
Definitely Vertonghen's, man.
But yeah, there we go. Hopefully we'll at least... Yeah, we can be competing soon. No reason why we can't. Funny enough, I'd actually forgotten to put Jamie O'Hara in my list. So, fair play for giving him the...
We'll let that slide. We'll let it slide, don't worry.
Bentaleb for a period. You know, I have to give Tim Sherwood that one.
Yeah.
For a period.
He was top. He was top.
I'll give him that one. I just want, like you said, like, you know, there is an element of jealousy to Cobham, and I feel like some people in the chat think I'm a Cobham FC fan, but, you know, that's by the by. But yeah, I just want the academy to get to a point where, you know, we'll be at a certain level and we can still rely on, you know, certain products to, you know, potentially be the fifth sub, or like they could fill in the occasional game against, you know, when Norwich inevitably come back to the Prem. Because I think our academy training at this joint called Balls Cross. And it would be nice to say we've got some Balls Cross boys in there, but it's not at a level where we can use that name just yet. Like, we got, you know, Carrington, they can just say it. Haylen, they can just say it. Cobham, they can just say it. We can't quite say Balls Cross just yet, but soon come, man, soon come.
There was something Jose said midway through last season about how, I think he was asked a question on, you know, how do you feel about our youth products and whatnot? And he particularly mentioned the class of 04, basically, the people born in that year. So under 16s and below. Mm. So he's, according to him, there's a threshold. Anyone old, you know, above that isn't quite at the level. They won't hit the trajectory we'd like them to. So if he's seeing that as well, then clearly something must have changed in between, you know, at a particular period of time before and after those players started being bedded into the academy. So I don't know what it is, but hopefully, you know, obviously that will take a number of years to actually see the fruits of that labour. So we just have to wait and see.
Yeah, this is what I mean. We've also got a few young talents, like Dane Scarlett in particular, looks like a heavy talent, which is why obviously when we go into the transfer market, we are looking to sign a forward. I just hope it's not, say, a young forward to kind of block the pathway of Dane Scarlett, or maybe even Troy Parrott, who's actually been doing well on these loans recently, can potentially kind of be a slow burner like Kane was. I don't think he'll get quite to Kane's level, but definitely a useful squad player, maybe, but I guess that takes us somewhat excitingly into the transfer market. Obviously it's been a bit quiet in terms of incomings recently, but the rumour mill has been strong. We look like we might actually sign like a proper Brazilian, like not some of the Brazilians we've already got, but like proper Brazilians. Like, apparently, we're not seriously in for Jesus. Other fans are trying to twist it, saying he rejected us, but I don't think anyone else really believes that. And looks like we're hot on either Rafinha or Richarlison. I guess
there's only one answer, isn't it?
It's nice. Who would you prefer?
It's a funny one, really, because I think initially I was against Richarlison. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, actually, like when I was thinking about it, I was like, this is a player who could play a number of different roles, but actually, I would rather have someone who was a specialist and good in one role. And if that was going to be my reasoning, it would, every single time, it would have to be Rafinha. Every single time, have to be Rafinha. I've seen more positive games where this guy has influenced the game with a goal or an assist or just general play than I have in the however many seasons I've watched Richarlison. So I feel like whilst the money is going to be high, because that's a valuable asset to Leeds, that's a no-brainer. I think we should be going all out to try and sign Rafinha, personally.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there are benefits to Richarlison. I like his shithousery. He was always a whiner. He does this, he does that. But he never downs tools. Like, he doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's something I can never put against Richarlison. I feel like Conte would love working with someone like him. There are benefits to him. I know people have said he can obviously cover down the middle as well if Kane needed a rest. But I feel like if we were to sign Richarlison, it puts even more impetus on needing to sign a creative mid. You know what I'm saying? If for some reason we didn't sign, you know, a creative mid or like a 10 or someone who can play behind strikers, then I'd be like, okay, we have to go get Rafinha then, because Rafinha is naturally the more creative of the two. Like, yes, we can't play Rafinha, Kulusevski, Kane and Son all at the same time, But I know that at least if Rafinha's playing, there's not going to be any creativity lost, should we say. Whereas if Kane has a rest and Richarlison goes in, where's the creativity going to come from apart from Kulusevski? Do you know what I'm saying? So yeah, that wouldn't really work for me if we were to sign Richarlison. But yeah, as long as if it was Richarlison, it has to be Richarlison and another creative player like Rafinha. I saw some clips of him playing on the left today. Thank you, Arsenal fans, for reposting that one. Hopefully it bites you in the ass. He's not really a 1v1 take man on the outside and whip it. He prefers to like actually play. It's from what I could see anyway. He prefers to like whip it like a bit deeper, like come out, like start, like hit the crossroom a bit deeper, play. It's almost like he's playing to cut in on his right foot, but he's still playing it with his left. Do you know what I'm saying? Not like outside of the foot, Quaresma things, but he's still trying to keep on the inside of his foot. So, yeah, I'd still rather Rafinha, but get me an Eriksen or a Maddison if you're giving me Richarlison as well.
Yeah, I think it's night and day in terms of the individuals itself, in terms of ability and whatnot. You know, he is a Mahrez regen. Almost, you can say, like he's just absolutely, you know, this general quality, the excitement factor, the fact that you can also, you know, obviously it's going to be difficult, you know, rotating. Conte will have good headaches that we'd want as fans. But honestly, if you're paying the same amount for either one, I think it's an absolute no-brainer, because Everton are actually, you know, they are taking a piss with their asking price, to be honest, for Richarlison.
Yeah, this equally is, I guess, even higher for a fee for Rafinha, who it looks he's been heavily rumored to be waiting for Barcelona, who would have to find some kind of funding from like Klarna or something like that, PayPal monthly installments.
Credit.
Bro, yeah, that's it. I don't know where they're gonna find the money to do him, Lewandowski and Bernardo Silva. It's just done. Yeah, I don't know. I think, obviously, out of the North London clubs, he's been rumoured to prefer Champions League football. So I guess that puts us in the driving seat. And I was just thinking on that point as well, where if we sign Richarlison, we'd need a creative player. But if we sign Rafinha, we'd need a striker. So I was just thinking, what would be easier to attain? A quality, I guess, creator or a good rotational striker? And I'd side to the latter, even though I've kind of warmed to the idea of Richarlison a bit. I still feel like Rafinha is going to give us something more, which we need, especially in a creative sense. Someone who can play both flanks, potentially someone that can just keep Lucas Moura either on the left or out the team, because I think he's all but useless on that right-hand side. I think Rafinha can just come in and just make that position his own in rotation with Deke. So that would be my preferred option, even though the fee is something like 60, 65 million. I think we haven't spent any of this kind of cash injection money per se yet. So I think we'd be pretty safe in that. But I just wouldn't be too sure as to kind of what rotational striker I think we'd sign.
I need to do some research on this Lucas Paqueta guy. Like I've had a look at the FB ref, and I know it's not everything. You know, I think his progressive pass was a bit lower than like Eriksen, for example. But I did take into account he receives the ball a lot later than Eriksen, quite a lot. Because I think when he plays for Brazil, a lot of the time he's actually played up front. Like, he can play up front, he could play 10, he could play 8. So yeah, I think I'm going to do a bit more Paqueta research this week and see what's popping. And then it's like, you know, if the rumours are true about Arsenal dropping, what, I think 50 mil plus 10 mil in add-ons for Rafinha as a bid, it's like, if we're going to try and match that, and this whole, pardon me, this whole, you know, looking for 10 targets and, you know, eventually bidding for the right ones or whatever is true, if we can put 65 on Rafinha, do we put 60 on Maddison, if possible? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'd rather have saved the 60 for Bastoni, personally, and then tried to get Eriksen on a free. But obviously, it's up to Eriksen where he wants to go. But yeah, it's just definitely something to think about.
For sure. I think we could do both.
Well, I think Madders, we could end Madders up doing both
in terms of getting the expensive centre back and the expensive kind of forward minded player, whether that be a creator or a forward. I think we'd be more likely to pay like a kind of bigger fee for maybe a striker, like say if Lautaro became available. I'm not going to mention the Portuguese Donny from Atletico Madrid because that is a pipe dream and a half. But there's always that little twinkle in Levy's eye that I think if that was even remotely doable, then they would probably do it. I think Osimhen's been a player of interest in the past before he went to Napoli. He'd obviously have to command a big fee. Also fits the profile. It's the weird one. I've got a feeling it will just come out of nowhere.
I also don't want to say his name because Tottenham fans keep getting tricked. But there is a certain guy that's Argentinian, left-footed, and isn't Lionel Messi. Apparently, this Inter deal is looking very difficult. And I think like Sevilla or something are in for him, but they only want to pay him like, well, I say only. They want to pay him like three million euros for the year or something like that. I'm not too sure on the specifics, but I don't know if I want Dybala or not personally, but probably for more tactical reasons. But at the same time, if Conte wants Dybala, then you know what I'm saying. Fair enough.
There is a sticky one. I think Dybala's quality, it's hard to question. I think he would fit Conte's structure quite well, but his injury record over the last 3 years is looking quite sticky. I think he averages like missing something like 50 days a season. And his wages, I was looking at this when I was debating another player from Juventus earlier with a Chelsea fan as to why he would join Chelsea. And I was looking at Dybala's wages. He's on 250,000 euros a week. So to come in to Spurs, he'd obviously be on something similar, if not more. I don't know. I would probably personally still do it because he may not even like be necessarily first team. But at the same time, I don't know if he'll be willing to be a rotational option at Spurs. And considering I think Kulusevski didn't get as much game time as he would have liked at Juventus because of Dybala as well, it's a bit of a tricky dynamic in that sense. And welcome Gogeta to the stream. Wow. It is humid in here. Rafinha or Richarlison. We just covered that. Most of us picked Rafinha. I think purely just because he's generally a better player. And that sums up for, I guess, most of our transfer business. I think this, the Ed Spence, by the time of this audio, Gadget just says Rafinha's the correct answer. The Ed Spence looks like we're going to have a bid for him soon. But it's obviously rumoured that Levy has taken personal control of that deal, which was met by literally the exact same reaction from all Spurs fans as to that being the reason why it hasn't happened yet. But yeah, it looks like a formality, surely.
Yeah, so that's... Yeah. Oh, no, go on, Sting.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, I agree. Just get it done. Get it done soon. And... I think you can afford. I think Levy's involvement is probably. He's probably thinking, you know, championship club. You can obviously have a little. There's a little bit of wiggle room there. Whereas, yeah, Paratici will probably do all the big signings, all the more expensive players that Conte demands. I think, and I think another thing probably just to mention is there have been quite a few deals now under Paratici that have sort of gone under the radar and bang, we're in for him. We're going to get him like a few days later. And I think Kulusevski and Bentancur happened, I think, quite quickly. I don't think we're in for him for a while. And Bissouma, even though it was just rumours, it wasn't anything sort of concrete, just suddenly happened, I'd say, from my perspective at least. I don't know if how much reading everyone else has done up on it, but that happened quite swiftly as well. So hopefully there's someone under the radar or semi under the radar, you know, that, you know, we're looking at. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. And to conclude, I guess, some of our transfer business, Gogeta makes another good point. Saying the lack of centre-back news is worrying. Would you guys agree or am I thinking it too much?
I think I understand why Gogeta, one underscore, is worried, because I think we're in this weird place where, you know, it's not even July and our club has been serious. Do you know what I mean? This is unheard of at Tottenham. So we just don't know how to feel. Do you know what I mean? I think I'm not worried. I'm obviously disappointed Bastoni's agent has made it clear, like, you know, kid doesn't want to bounce, which is fair. But I think, you know, I don't really read too much into the whole Paratici gets like 10 people lined up, 10 targets lined up, because I personally think that's fairly commonplace around the league. Not every single director of football recruitment team does it, but just even, and I get maybe a bit more commonplace down lower the leagues. But I remember when I was an intern at Wycombe Wanderers, I was in Gareth Ainsworth's office and he literally had like a board. Obviously, you know, it's the facilities were very different, but he had a board of like 8 players per position, like even goalkeepers. There was like this 18-year-old goalkeeper in the Chelsea Academy that he wanted to get in for a trial and stuff, but that was like his 6th option and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. I feel like that kind of information was maybe dropped to like get us on the right side of Paratici. I don't know if I'm being a bit harsh, but that's just me personally, because, you know, I think someone asked a question the other day, has he beat the Frattici allegations yet? And it's like, listen, let's not forget, this guy tried to hire Gennaro Ivan Gattuso in our face. Like, and the only reason he didn't is because the fans were like, fuck that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we can't forget that. I feel like he's definitely learned since. And say Conte left and we didn't have a problem with Gattuso, he wouldn't try it. Do you know what I'm saying? I think he's learned enough. But I'm not overly worried about the centre-back stuff. I don't think we'll get Guardiol. I think he's too expensive. He's got like 4 years left on his contract or something, or 3 years. He'll be too expensive. I hope Pau Torres goes to United, because I do think him and Maguire at centre-back would be hilarious. Like, no, Pau Torres isn't a bad defender. I just think it would be so funny watching both of them get bullied, or like Maguire trying to palm off a responsibility to him. Ndika, I need to have more of a look at. He looks very sturdy defender. He's a good carrier of the ball. I'm not sure what his passing between the lines is like. And then, you know, with Bremer, I'd prefer Bremer in the centre, but is his passing range as good as Eric Dier's? I don't think so. So that's that one. But yeah, I'm not overly worried about the left centre-back. I read that Conte wants everybody in before pre-season. I think if we were to get another 4 players, I feel like at least 3 of them for pre-season.
Yeah, it could end up like centre back is a position that I'm personally willing to be a bit patient for, because I don't think it's realistic for us to make or have all of our transfer business done by this pre-season trip to Korea anyway. But given stronger rumours, I guess you could say, obviously the most likely replacements for Bastoni would be either Pau Torres or Ndika.
We've got that Ukrainian kid on our radar as well, remember?
Yeah. He'd be looking to maybe be signed as maybe a young prospect, but you wouldn't be surprised if Ilya Zarbani, the player who you mentioned, I guess, would come in and just essentially make an impact. Like, he could play in the back 3, 1 cup game, really impress, and then just go on a run of games from there. I haven't heard anything about that one, but yeah, there was someone from Kiev that's saying, you know, it's all just rumours at the moment, we don't even know what's going on. But yeah, I think Ali Gob was saying something like, yeah, we're definitely looking to bring him in, but we're just looking for some clarity on what's happening with Ukrainian football at the moment. Yeah, Gogeta now saying being patient with my beloved Spurs is a dangerous game. I hear that. I think I'll maybe just have a bit more patience than most, to be fair. I think Pau Torres, being suspect defensively, as I've said before, I don't think the Euros was the best representation of him. I think he can be a bit timid, but I think one, that's something he's improved on over the last season. He held his own against Liverpool and Bayern. And I guess some of those deficiencies defensively could be kind of helped by playing in a three at the back. So three at the back tax could help. And obviously he's...
Emery tax.
Yeah, exactly. His passing could be good. His passing range, in fact, could be a good help for our automations. Obviously, especially when releasing wing-backs, his infield passing is very good as well. He's a decent ball carrier, whereas Evan Ndicka's not as expansive passing range-wise, but he's someone who I'd see as like a direct upgrade on Ben Davis, because they're very much the same from what I've seen of Ndicka, which is quite little, to be fair. But his underlapping runs, really, really good. I'd say, yeah, his infield passing is good. His 1v1 defending looks to be very good. Obviously, left-footed, which is a preference. Not essential in my opinion, but someone who is very comfortable on his left foot. And for me, when he's carrying the ball into the opposition half, when he's generally like making a run off the ball, he's just a lot more measured and composed than Ben Davis is. Like, I always feel like Ben Davis is on the edge of kind of just like trying to keep it from going 100 miles an hour. He's got this weird trait, Davis, that he'll play a 1-2, but he'll fizz it into the person he's passing to and then run directly at the person he's passed to, instead of maybe most of the time just attacking space in behind, which he does do at times as well, but that's a trait which is just never made sense to me, ever. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we recruit either of those two. But I'm willing to be patient to see if there's any more clarity on this Bastoni deal, because this Skriniar to PSG one's taken suspiciously long. And Gojo is saying the signing of this Ukrainian defender smells of a 1/4 signing. Yeah, maybe we can learn from that 1/4 signing as well, because he'd probably get into this team right now. Perhaps even on the left. We certainly should have got a bigger fee for him. So yeah, we'll see what happens there. Who did you guys have a preference for? If it was Pau Torres or Ndicka?
Of the two, I'm taking... Of the little I've seen, I've seen a lot more Pau Torres than Ndicka. Of the little I've seen, I'm taking Ndicka only because I feel like he'd be a lot less likely to be bullied. And he's not a bad crosser of the ball, actually. He's not a bad crosser of the ball from the little I've seen. I'm taking Ndicka. I just worry Pau Torres would get the you know, you just get like, I think Saint-Maximin would have anyone up. But I feel like Saint-Maximin wouldn't need to do the FIFA Street stuff to get past him. He'd just give him a good barge and he's done.
Yeah, I haven't seen Ndicka, so I can't comment on that. But I've seen enough of Pau Torres to say, nah, not him. Don't get this man anywhere near my club. So, yeah.
I was honestly hand-hot. I was saying in a space yesterday that Evan Ndicka would be my slight preference. But it's a good thing with both of those players, in my opinion, that it's a good cherry on top thing that both of them have very good European pedigree now. Obviously, that both like very successful in the Europa League at least, which Conte needs. Like, if there's been any kind of shortcomings in his career, it's been in Europe, where we've already got players that have been in the Champions League final, still in the squad, and then signing players who have obviously been successful in the Europa League can only add to that. So yeah, either of those would be an improvement for me. So yeah, we'll just have to see what happens. It feels like Paratici's kind of got this like backup plan to just give Lo Celso to Villarreal and then get Pau Torres on like a cheaper option. But yeah, I guess we'll see. I'm trying to think if there's any other transfer news. It's just been announced, I guess, that Eriksen, it doesn't look likely to happen.
Good.
That might not be for footballing reasons, to be fair. So, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully, he just doesn't go to United.
Just stay at Brentford, as I say. Yeah, there are talks about him potentially even just staying as well. So hopefully that's the case. I think I don't want too much being demanded of him physically. Anyway.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, we've had Tops come up before when he's obviously a registered qualified cardiologist, and he was saying, it's a bit of a miracle that Eriksen is still playing. A shout out to him. He's on call and he's had to leave the podcast this evening for work. And yeah, it's a weird one. But you've got Conte, whose extracurricular conditioning is probably up there with the most intense in perhaps even world football, then yeah, it could be understandable why we may not be taking that risk, or he might not decide to take that risk with us. It'll be an interesting couple of weeks for sure. Obviously, Greta Steinsen starting his job as Paratici's number two by, I think it's the 1st of July. So I'd expect there to be quite a lot of news between then and when we head to our pre-season tour of Korea. But until then, it's been New Spurs Order. Thank you, Sting. Thank you, Macho Man, for joining me this evening to chop it up. See, the audio comes out every Saturday. Catch us on the Twitter, where we're looking to be a bit more active, on Instagram as well, at New Spurs Order. Still trying to stay active during this kind of summer period where there is no games, but obviously with Tottenham there's always something to talk about. But
I guess watch
the next stream. What's up?
No, just saying more spaces hopefully as well from us.
Yeah, you know we'll see
it's soon come.
We've got a few more things planned over the next few weeks, so you just have to stay tuned to find out what those are. Again, shout out to Kojita as well for being ever present in the stream like most weeks. And until next time when we stream and record, have a good one. Peace.
On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier!
Sports Social Podcast Network.